Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 10th of March. This hour of the program, we'll be talking about Northern Ireland. Northern Ireland has seen an increase in troubles over the last 2 days. Yesterday, 2 days after British soldiers were shot and killed in Northern Ireland, gunmen opened fire and killed a police officer, reinforcing a challenge to the authorities to maintain a mood of reconciliation, underpinning a still uncertain peace. The British Prime Minister Gordon Brown visited Northern Ireland yesterday to insist that the protracted peace effort, beginning with the Good Friday Agreement in 1998, could not be reversed despite the death of two soldiers outside the British Army base in Antrim on Saturday. The soldiers were shot hours before they were set to depart for Afghanistan, and two pizza delivery men also died in the attack. Brown said the political process will not and can never be shaken. We'll be talking about what some have described as Northern Ireland being on the brink of something awful after many years of relative peace. What's been happening? Who's claiming responsibility? We'll be talking about all of that this hour of our program, and we'll have two guests with us. We are going to start the conversation with Professor John McGarry. He studied at Trinity College in Dublin, and he is the Professor of Political Studies, Canada Research Chair in Nationalism and Democracy, and he is joining us by phone today from Canada. He is at Queen's University at Kingston, and his research areas include ethnic and national conflict, state responses to ethnic and national diversity, politics of Northern Ireland, electoral systems in divided societies. He has done work on policing reform in Northern Ireland, and he is joining us by phone. A little bit later, our guest is joining us from the University of Liverpool. We'll welcome phone calls, as we always do. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you'd like to send an email, you can do that, and that address is talk@wpr.org. Professor McGarry, thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thank you, Kathleen.
Why is it that Northern Ireland is seeing this kind of horror again right now? Is there a resurgence in dissident groups in the country?
Well, yes. For the past couple of years or so, the police have been reporting an increase in activity from various dissident Republican groups, an increase in the threat level, and but these were the first killings of security forces, either police or army, in Northern Ireland in the past 11 to 12 years. The timing of it might be connected to the fact that the chief constable, in response to the growing threat from dissident Republicans, announced in the last week or so that he was going to call for special surveillance or reconnaissance forces from the British Army to come to Northern Ireland to help him in the search for these dissident groups. And these attacks on the army and police might have been a response to this call from the chief constable.
Were those surveillance forces already in Northern Ireland, or were they on their way?
Well, the I don't know if what level of surveillance there is or surveillance forces there are in Northern Ireland, but the chief constable had asked for an organization called the Special Reconnaissance Regiment to send forces to Northern Ireland. So that suggested an increase in the level of surveillance. And the introduction of this group, which is part of the British Army Special Forces. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, over the course of the Troubles, the British Army Special Forces, including groups like the Special Air Service, have been involved in a range of shady activities. And this was quite unpopular amongst Irish Republicans. So these dissident Republican organizations, I think, may have been trying to take advantage of the introduction of these elements into Northern Ireland to send a message.
Obviously, they were concerned about things before this week. Have they been concerned, or do we not know about the power sharing agreement? They're not happy with the way Stormont is operating. Or what are their initial grievances?
The dissident Republicans, of course, completely reject the power sharing agreement. They reject the legitimacy of the Stormont Assembly. They think that that Northern Ireland should be part of a United Ireland, and they reject any British presence in Northern Ireland. And under the terms of the Good Friday Agreement, Northern Ireland is still a sovereign part of the United Kingdom. So dissidents have never accepted the Good Friday Agreement, and they've never accepted the power-sharing arrangement. If anything, they might see this power-sharing arrangement as a threat to them, because if it is successful, then that would suggest that their militancy has no future. And it might also suggest that, at least for the foreseeable future, that Northern Ireland is going to be peaceful within the United Kingdom, and this is something that dissident Republicans don't want.
And yet, Northern Ireland has been peaceful for some years now.
Yes, indeed it has. And one of the great successes of the Good Friday Agreement has been a dramatic reduction in violence. In fact, as I said at the beginning, no army soldier has been killed in Northern Ireland since 1997, and that's before Saturday. And no police officer has been killed in Northern Ireland since 1998, and that was before yesterday. And in fact, Northern Ireland was one of the safest places in the world over the course of the last 10 years to be a police officer or to be a soldier. No one was killed. But this seems to have been changed over the course of the last few days.
Yeah. I would imagine because the country has experienced peace for quite a few years now, that there would be tremendous outrage about this particular act, and that it would be hard for those who have committed these atrocities to gain much support. Am I wrong?
Well, I hope you're not wrong. I hope you're right, and I think you are. I mean, the overwhelming majority of people in Northern Ireland in both communities support the agreement, support the power sharing arrangements, and abhor this kind of violence. So almost everyone in Northern Ireland will be appalled at the killing of these soldiers and police officers. Now, what the dissident Republicans are banking on is that either the British Army will react in some or the police will react in some kind of heavy-handed way, going into Republican areas, perhaps searching people and increasing support for Republican militancy by these kinds of actions. Alternatively, they might be hoping that Protestant paramilitary organizations, which have been quite dormant over the course of the last few years, will see this attack on the British security forces as an attack on them, mm-hmm. as an attack on their Britishness, and will give rise to a militant response from Protestant paramilitaries, perhaps going out and shooting some innocent Catholic. And then that, in turn, will cause at least some people in the Republican community, perversely, I think, to look to these dissidents as protectors, thereby giving more support to their cause. That's the danger. That's certainly what dissident Republicans are hoping for. So it's very important that the British government and the police and loyalist organizations understand this and respond appropriately by not reacting aggressively, by allowing the police to do their work, encouraging the Catholic population to inform on these dissidents, because that's probably the only way they're going to be caught.
Yeah. And how have the police and the army reacted so far? Have they been quite quiet?
Well, my understanding is that they have not. I mean, I'm not in Northern Ireland,
right.
But my understanding is that they have not responded in any aggressive manner. Certainly the level of searches and roadblocks, et cetera, understandably have been increased. but there's been no announcement, for example, of an increase in British Army troops in Northern Ireland or anything of this nature. And I personally think that's a good thing, because I think that is the sort of announcement that Irish Republican dissidents might be hoping for.
Mm-hmm. When you describe, though, what it would take for this to escalate, it doesn't take much, does it?
Not at all. A few killings by loyalists would cause this to spiral, I think. Now, I think, to be fair, Kathleen, we also have to recognize that we have had 3 killings in the course of 3 days. It's too early to say yet that this is part of an escalating trend. Dissident Republicans are very few in number. According to the police, they are not well armed, they're well resourced, and they don't have much support. So it's not perhaps as bleak as it might seem. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not. Even if there was to be some kind of retaliation by loyalists, it's not automatically the case, as it would have been 15 or 20 years ago, that this would produce some kind of significant response from Republicans. It's early days yet, but these dissidents are fairly marginal organizations. They're not like the mainstream IRA. They don't have the number of personnel, and they don't have the same weaponry, and they don't have the same popular support. So it's much too early to consign the power sharing agreement or the peace process to the dustbin.
Mm-hmm. A Dublin newspaper received a call from what they said was the real, they were calling themselves the real IRA, which claimed responsibility for the army base attacks. Do you know anything about this group? Is it confirmed this is who they are, and are they a real, real splinter group with not very many members?
Well, the real IRA have been around for a long time, since the 1990s, before the agreement. They're a breakaway splinter from the mainstream IRA, who rejected the agreement and the peace process. And they were most infamously responsible for the Omagh bombing of 1998, which killed 29 people, including a woman, I believe, pregnant with twins. Mm. But they've been dormant for the last 10 years or so, I think, because the popular outrage and disgust at the Omagh atrocity caused them to keep underground for a while. And I think they learned something from that. This was not a bombing of civilians, or these were not bombings of civilians in a market, as happened in Omagh. These were direct attacks on the security forces in the army, in one case, and the police in another. Now, it's awful to say, but amongst some Republicans, these will be seen as more legitimate targets than would innocent civilians. So that's why I think the real IRA have tried to target the army and the police.
And yet there were at least 2 pizza delivery men who, my understanding is, weren't related to this at all, who were hurt pretty badly.
That's right, yes. I think it was mentioned at the outset that they were killed, if I heard you right. But no, I believe that they were critically injured, mm-hmm. One of them more critically than the other. The real IRA claimed in their acknowledgement that they were responsible, that they made no apology for shooting these pizza delivery workers, because these pizza delivery workers were aiding and abetting the British occupying forces in Northern Ireland. Now, it might be very difficult for your listeners to understand this logic, but in the past, Republicans have indeed killed people merely because they were either working on the roofs of police stations, or they were delivering milk to army barracks or anything of that nature. It's obviously reprehensible, but there is a history of these so-called collaborators being considered to be legitimate targets.
Mm-hmm. And then the news reports this morning are saying that the Continuity IRA took responsibility for the attack on the police officer.
Yes.
What's that group?
Well, this is another organization which has been around for around the same length of time. It's just another splinter organization, which, as the name suggests, wants to, well, the, both their names, the Real IRA and the Continuity IRA, they're both claiming that in some senses they are the Real IRA. They've inherited the traditions of the old one, and the old mainstream IRA have become turncoats and traitors. And these people are carrying on the age-old Republican struggle, which has been going on in Ireland since the Easter Rising of 1916.
Mm-hmm. We welcome phone calls for our guests. Joining us this first half hour is Professor John McGarry, Professor of Political Studies, Canada Research Chair in Nationalism and Democracy at Queen's University in Kingston, Canada. He studied at Trinity in Dublin some years ago. We later will be speaking with the professor and head of the School of Politics and Communication at the University of Liverpool. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. As you heard the professor say, after years of Northern Ireland being one of the safest places in the world, and for police in Belfast, it's been incredibly safe for a number of years. That was all shattered over the last few days with two British soldiers being killed outside a military barracks close to Belfast on Saturday. Four individuals were wounded, including two people, I believe, from a pizza delivery truck. And then we had another shooting yesterday where a gunman opened fire and killed a police officer late on Monday in Armagh. So join us if you would like. Is this terribly worrisome trend? Is the peace accord that has been signed and the coalition government on fragile footing here? What about how the police and the army respond to this? How many dissidents are there in Northern Ireland? How worried are you, as one of the people in the news was quoted as saying, that Northern Ireland could be on the brink of something awful? 800-486-8655, or send an email if you'd like. That address is talk@wpr.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We welcome your phone calls now. 800-486-8655 is the number, and Mike from Whitefish Bay is our first caller. Hello, Mike.
Good morning. I'd like to ask your guest, how valuable a piece of real estate is Northern Ireland, to support this terrible, bloody conflict for all these years? Why don't the British just give it up? I mean, is it that valuable a territory? And is the religious distinction really just an excuse to fight over property?
I think, to be fair, the British government is holding on to Northern Ireland, as you put it, not because of its value as a piece of real estate, or indeed because of any strategic value, because the majority of people in Northern Ireland want to be part of the United Kingdom. And in fact, under the terms of the Good Friday Agreement, the British government has conceded that at any time that changes, that is, at any time that the majority of people in Northern Ireland want to leave the United Kingdom and join a United Ireland, they can do so. So Britain is not, contrary to what Republicans might argue, or dissident Republicans might argue, holding on to Northern Ireland because of some kind of selfish strategic reason. The question about is religion an excuse? Well, I think, that we have to understand here something, that this is not about religion. This is not a conflict over faith between Protestants and Catholics. It's a conflict about nationalism. Most Catholics are Irish nationalists, They want Northern Ireland to become part of the United Kingdom, or the United Ireland, sorry, whereas most Protestants, virtually all Protestants, are unionists, and they want Northern Ireland to stay part of the United Kingdom. And many Protestants don't go to church. There are some Catholics who don't go to chapel. This is they're not arguing over religion. They're arguing about something profoundly secular, something that's going on in other parts of the world, like the Middle East, Bosnia, Cyprus, a whole range of places. It's a conflict about nationalism.
Thanks very much for the call. I'm wondering, I'm trying to figure out how to fashion the question, how the economy, because I know there have been concerns about who has the better jobs, et cetera, in Northern Ireland. Everybody's economy around the world seems to be tanking after Ireland was doing so well, and Northern Ireland was as well. Does that figure into more of an interest in some of these dissident groups because the economies are tanking?
No, I don't think so. I mean, it is true that the Northern Ireland economy, like most other economies around the world, has been experiencing some problems recently with property prices declining. But I don't think this is behind this problem at all. Certainly, the inequality between Catholics and Protestants, economic inequality that used to exist, has been narrowed significantly in recent decades and years. It still exists, but it's also not something that's a salient political issue at the moment. So, it might be tempting to argue, as Neil Ferguson, the Harvard historian, has put it recently, that this global economic crisis is going to be just violence and bloodshed all mm-hmm. around the world, but Northern Ireland is not an example of that.
Mm-hmm. I've been in Belfast several times, and was there last summer and previously 10 years ago. This was the first time that we drove across Northern Ireland, spent some time in Belfast, and then drove across the country. I was still quite struck, Professor McGarry, about how segregated the country still seems to be. One town, God Save the Queen, the next town didn't have that sign, the communities in Belfast still being markedly segregated.
Yeah.
Has there been a lot of improvement on that front?
Not really,
no.
And one shouldn't expect it, because you have to remember, Kathleen, that this country, region, has went through 30 to 40 years of violent trauma,
yeah.
And as part of that violence, there was segregation and polarization, with people retreating into their respective ghettos. And there's been, as I said at the beginning, relative peace for the last decade, but one wouldn't expect these two communities, who still, to some extent, distrust each other, to start intermixing, to start intermarrying, to start moving into each other's housing estates just yet. I mean, one would hope that would happen as peace is consolidated, but one shouldn't expect it to happen overnight or even over the course of a few years.
Yeah. Protestant leaders have said that the army attack particularly, vindicated the police's decision to call on the army intelligence specialists. What do you think of that? Does it vindicate that decision, which could be a problematic decision, but does it vindicate it, that there was indeed something going on?
It's a very good question, and it's difficult to answer. I mean, at one level, I suppose one could say they're right, that the chief constable doesn't have the intelligence resources to root out these dissidents. But the problem is, and this is what Republican politicians have said, if you introduce these special reconnaissance units into Northern Ireland, it's much less likely, I think, or it's less likely, certainly, that the Catholic population is going to inform on these dissidents in its midst. And I think that it's much more likely that if these people are to be caught, they will be caught by their own people, if I can put it that way, informing on them to the police, rather than being caught by the activities of special reconnaissance units, which are just as likely to be completely counterproductive.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a difficult question. I think that it would have been much better if the police had been able to deal with this with their own resources and relying on the Catholic population to turn these people over. And I would hope that in the next days and weeks that the Catholic population in Northern Ireland will do exactly that.
And do you know that there are a number of people who would be informants, or is the population going in that direction?
Well, informants is a sort of a nasty word,
yes,
in Northern Ireland, but I think it would be quite legitimate for the Catholic population, if they know who's responsible for these murders, to go to the police and to give them information on that. Because we have a new police service in Northern Ireland. It's not the old Royal Ulster Constabulary. It's been radically reformed. There are many more Catholics in its midst. It has a name and an ethos and a culture that's acceptable to both communities. It's trained according to very high human rights standards. It's not the old police. I mean, it's become welcome. It has a policing board that's made up of both Catholic and Protestant politicians. I think Catholics should have no fear about going to this place and giving them whatever information they might have.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for being with us, Professor McGarry.
It's a pleasure, Kathleen.
Our guest this half hour, Professor John McGarry. He is the Professor of Political Studies, Canada Research Chair in Nationalism and Democracy, and joining us by phone from Canada today, where he is at Queen's College. And we thank him for his expertise. We're going to be switching guests this particular half hour. Topic remains the same, and your phone calls are still welcome. I know that many of you have followed politics in Northern Ireland for quite some time, and it's very sad history and a lot of sadness over the last few days after a time of relative peace in Northern Ireland. Two British soldiers were shot and killed outside an army barracks over the weekend, and pizza delivery men were seriously wounded as well. And then yesterday there was the killing of a police officer in Armagh. And so we're looking at all of this, who the groups are, how the government is functioning in Northern Ireland, why the country has been remarkably peaceful for such a long period of time, and whether and how everybody will respond to this particular incident, which could escalate violence or perhaps keep it under wraps. So that's what's on our plate this morning. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you'd like to send an email, you can do that as well, and that is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org, for you to join our conversation. And our next guest's phone line is busy, but let me just introduce him, and he'll be off the phone in a moment. Our next guest is going to be Professor John Tong. He is head of the School of Politics and Communication Studies at the University of Liverpool, chair of the Youth Citizenship Commission, chair of the Political Studies Association of the United Kingdom, that has over 1,600 members. He's the author of a number of books, including Abandoning the Past, Republican and Loyalist Former Prisoners, and Conflict Transformation in Northern Ireland. Also, Ireland North and South, Convergence and Divergence on a Dual Polity Island, Ireland, Irish Protestant Identities, and a number of other books. And he will be joining us momentarily to talk about these attacks in Northern Ireland that have captured our attention again. So we will talk with him about some areas. The line is still busy. It's too bad. We could have kept our other guest for a while. We'll talk with him about how the government is doing in Stormont and what the best response on the part of the police would be to this. And we'll also be talking about the people who have been brought in from Britain, the intelligence forces, to look at what's been going on with dissident groups in Northern Ireland and if that's increasing the problems in the country. So that's coming up as we continue our conversation here. Our guest's line is busy, so we're just going to have to hold on here and try to reach him. Let me tell you, the next hour of our program, a really interesting series of articles done by a contributing editor of Gourmet magazine. Barry Estabrook will be with us. And I don't know if you've seen these articles, but they have to do with tomato workers in Florida. And one of the headlines of the story is, if you have eaten a tomato this winter, chances are very good that it was picked by a person who lives in virtual slavery. We will talk about these horrendous conditions, Florida's slave trade involving migrant workers, and how they have organized and improved their lot somewhat. So that will be coming up the second hour of our program this Tuesday morning. We're still trying to reach our guest, and we can take phone calls from you as well. I would imagine that some of you listening have been to Northern Ireland, and it would be interesting if you've been there at different times in history to inform us about what you've seen. And over the past few years, it's been relatively peaceful, still, as I said, somewhat quite a bit segregated, but not nearly the violence of 10 years previous, in the horrendous violence that went on for some 30 years. So we will be discussing all of that with our next guest and see if he has a different perspective on what's been going on the last few days in Northern Ireland. Professor John Tong will be joining us momentarily, and we also hope to hear from you during the course of the next half hour about your response to the Troubles. Would you agree with one of the people who was quoted in the news from National Public Radio that Northern Ireland may be on the brink of something awful, or is that indeed just a little overboard reaction to what has happened, horrendous as the violence has been, that considering that it has been a time of relative peace, that people may be able to move forward more peacefully. So that will be coming up momentarily. We just have to find our guest for the next half hour, and we hope that that will happen in a moment. We think that we're able to reach him in just a moment. So that's what's on our agenda. But feel free to call us, because I'd love to hear from some of you. I know that Milwaukee has been involved in various peace projects for a number of years as well, bringing young people to this city and to cities all over the country to deal with peace issues. So we certainly welcome calls from you. And we have been able to reach our guest, which is great. Professor John Tong joining us now. Professor, thank you so much for being with us.
You're welcome.
Our National Public Radio News started the hour by saying, having a young person on the air saying that they feared that Northern Ireland could be on the brink of something awful. Do you share that fear today, or do you think that this will be put under control soon?
Well, we're certainly not going to go back to the days of the 1970s, 80s, and 1990s in Northern Ireland, when you had the Provisional IRA with, you know, up to several thousand members and wide-scale support, launching a huge campaign of insurrection against British rule in Northern Ireland. The organisations that are carrying out the current violence, the real and continuity IRAs, are much, much smaller, and they have far, far less public support. So there is far less opportunity for a full-scale armed campaign. But what you may well get, unless all the people in the real and continuity IRAs are arrested and rounded up, what you'll get is occasional, what they would term in their language, spectaculars. You'll get occasional shootings and bombings. Remember, there's been already 18 attacks over the last 3 months alone, and it's only in recent days that there have actually been killings. But the groups have been growing in size, and they've been growing in audacity in recent months. So we're not going to go back to the really bad days in Northern Ireland, but on the other hand, the Real and Continuity IRA won't give up, really. They believe that they've got to carry on until the British leave Northern Ireland, however remote that prospect.
And why are these groups growing in size right now?
Combination of things. The Provisional IRA, disaffected members of the Provisional IRA, left to join the Real IRA in 1997. But the Real IRA really had to lie low to some extent after 1998, when they failed to scupper the Good Friday Agreement by killing 29 civilians at Omagh. Such was the revulsion against that that the Real IRA was forced to call a ceasefire soon after. They revived briefly after that, but then lack of public support and lack of weaponry, they failed to establish an arms supply line from Eastern Europe, which they attempted to do. So a combination of lack of support, lack of members, and lack of arms meant that, plus revulsion after the Omagh bombing, meant they couldn't really operate at all. But as time went on and people forgot about the horrors of the Troubles, I think that it was the Real IRA began to revive and began to recruit new members, as well as the old ex-Provisional IRA members. You've also got the Continuity IRA, which is smaller and less dangerous to some extent than the real IRA, and they also have been attempting to recruit as well.
Mm-hmm. And where are they getting those arms?
Well, that's a really good question, because the theories that have often been expounded in the media that have been that the arms were gathered from what the Provisional IRA had, but that's not actually true. The Provisional IRA was very, very tight and rigorous in terms of control of its weaponry. So they've had to, these two dissident IRAs have had to establish new supply lines, and that's really what the intelligence services are looking at the moment. Where are they getting these arms from? As I say, they tried to establish in about 2002 an arms supply from Eastern Europe, but the real IRA members were arrested and are currently serving 30 years in jail for that. So I think it's a really good question as to where they're actually getting their arms from.
Mm-hmm. What about the condemnation of these attacks? The BBC was reporting yesterday that every politician in the 108-strong Stormont Assembly will condemn the army base attack, but it doesn't mean that all the parties will be speaking with one voice.
Well, I think what's been really significant is the fact that Sinn Féin have condemned the attacks, even though for 25 years, Sinn Féin, as the, if you like, the political wing of the Provisional IRA, never condemned any attack on British, what they would term in those days, Crown Forces, that is, the British Army and the local police force. The big difference this time around is that Sinn Féin has condemned what has taken place, and the other big difference is that they've also urged people to cooperate with the police in bringing the killers to justice. That was unthinkable for Sinn Féin only 10 years ago. They simply wouldn't do that. Even after the real IRA blew up Homer in 1998, Sinn Féin didn't say to people, you've got to go and give information to the police. It's only 2 years ago, that Sinn Féin finally decided they would support a police service in Northern Ireland. That made a big difference to Northern Ireland politics, because it really has put all the politicians now, all the elected politicians, on the side of the security forces, whereas for a long time, even after the Provisional IRA ceasefire, that simply wasn't the case.
Mm-hmm. And what about how a response, the kind of response that we will see in Northern Ireland to find out who is behind all of these shootings and whether or not there will be increased surveillance of these dissident groups, et cetera? Could this be a dicey situation where some are saying that, you know, we got too much involvement here by forces we don't want in the country looking at this situation? I'm wondering who needs to handle an investigation here to make everybody happy, if that's possible.
The British Army has ruled out putting troops back on the streets of Northern Ireland. That would be counterproductive, because the last time that happened, of course, in the 70s, the troops alienated the nationalist population, and that led to a growth in support for the IRA. So the British Army will be very, very reluctant to do that. What you will see is a fortifying of army barracks, and you'll see a further fortification of the police stations in Northern Ireland. And they're already, you know, the legacy of the Troubles is they're not like ordinary police stations that you can go up to and go in. Even 10 years after the Provisional IRA ceasefire, police stations in Northern Ireland remain heavily fortified areas. You know, attacks on police stations are rare. What the dissidents will do is target individual officers out on duty. So you'll see a tightening of security at military installations, there's no doubt about that, but I don't think you'll see the troops back on the streets of Northern Ireland. It's about 18 months ago the decision was taken to put the police back into flak jackets because of the increased threat from dissidents, and now we can see why. The other thing, of course, is that, you know, it's unreal to pretend that Northern Ireland is any sense of normal society, because as well as the fortified police stations, you've got 30 peace walls physically segregating the Protestant and Catholic communities in the major urban areas like Belfast. So, mm-hmm. You know, they're not going to come down in the short term anyway. So you're going to have a sort of quasi-military appearance, in some ways, of the security installations in Northern Ireland.
We're going to welcome more phone calls for our guest. Our number is 800-486-8655. Joining us this half hour from Liverpool, Professor John Tong, head of the School of Politics and Communication Studies at the University of Liverpool, author of a number of books pertinent to our conversation, Abandoning the Past, Republican and Loyalist Former Prisoners and Conflict Transformation in Northern Ireland, Ireland North and South, Convergence and Divergence, another of his books, Irish Protestant Identity. And he's written extensively, has a number of other books to his credit. Here's our number to join the conversation, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you'd like to send an email, you can do that. That is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Professor John Tong, Jonathan Tong, is our guest this part of the program, and we welcome phone calls. If you want to listen, that's fine, but we'd like to hear from you as well. The number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Who do you think Professor Tong needs to be in charge of an investigation of all of this to make everybody, if that's possible, feel okay about it?
People investigating what's gone on in recent days. The Police Service of Northern Ireland, which Catholics now support in a way that Catholics never in previous generations ever supported the police in Northern Ireland. So the Police Service of Northern Ireland will take responsibility. But really, the war, if you want to call it that, against the dissident IRAs would only be won by the intelligence services. It's the intelligence services that have been relied upon to intercept and penetrate and infiltrate these groups. It's not going to be won by the British Army. The British Army doesn't want to go back on the streets, so it has to be won by the local policing, the Police Service of Northern Ireland, which used to be the Royal Ulster Constabulary, but has been substantially reformed, and the intelligence services. The policing's changed a great deal in Northern Ireland over the last few years as part of the peace process. It was basically 90% Protestant and Unionist, the police force, and Catholics didn't support it, but in recent years, what you've had is a quota system in which 50% Catholic and 50% non-Catholic, you have a quota system for entry to the police to try and get a better religious balance, and that creates a political balance as well with Catholic nationalists and Protestant Unionists within the same force.
Mm-hmm. Our previous guest was saying that they may have to rely on informants in the Catholic community. Are there many of those? Would you say that they could probably get to the bottom of this and we need more informants talking about what they know to get rid of some of these groups?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that's why Sinn Féin's decision to recommend to nationalists that they do talk to the police is really crucial, because Sinn Féin is the most popular party now amongst Catholics in Northern Ireland. And if Sinn Féin had said, still couldn't bring itself to cooperate with the police and recommend cooperation, then it's probable that the majority of Catholics wouldn't have cooperated with the police like the old days. But now things have changed, with Sinn Féin saying, yes, it's right to cooperate with the police. I think that will encourage far more people to cooperate than was in the past. One of the reasons the Provisional IRA was able to wage a war for 25, 30 years in Northern Ireland was, A, they had safe houses, and B, that a lot of nationalists wouldn't cooperate with the police. A lot of Catholics wouldn't cooperate with the police. They didn't like the police. They saw them as essentially Protestant Unionists. They saw them as a partisan force, rightly or wrongly. And that really was a big stumbling block. It's why the IRA, Provisional IRA, was the most effective guerrilla group in Europe and elsewhere for a large number of years. But that situation has changed. That makes it harder for the real IRA and continuity IRA to sustain a campaign, because if people see something now that they think is suspicious, they will contact the police in a way they wouldn't want.
Why would a police officer be targeted if the force is now 50% Catholic, 50% Protestant?
Well, recruitment is 50% Catholic and 50% Protestant at the moment, but there's still a generation before it would become equal in terms of overall numbers within the police. The figures would still be about 75% Protestant, 25% Catholic overall, until the effect of that quota system finally works through. But why would the dissident IRAs target the Police Service of Northern Ireland? Well, to the dissident IRAs, the religion of a member of the Police Service of Northern Ireland is irrelevant. As far as the dissident IRAs are concerned, they represent part of a partitioned Ireland, but they're upholding the state of Northern Ireland, the Police Service of Northern Ireland, and therefore, in the vernacular of the real and continuity IRA, they're legitimate targets. The range of legitimate targets for the dissident organisations is pretty extensive. It's basically anyone in the British Army in Northern Ireland or elsewhere. It's anyone in the Police Service of Northern Ireland, and it's anyone who serves or helps catering staff at a police station or at an army base would be legitimate targets in their vernacular, because two of the people shot on Saturday evening were simply pizza delivery workers. The real IRA issued a statement saying that because they were delivering food to a British Army base, they were collaborators with British colonialism in Northern Ireland. So, you know, it's a pretty wide range of targets that they have.
Right. Yeah, that is a pretty wide range of targets, isn't it?
Yeah.
And what about the power-sharing government? What about what's going on at Stormont? How they will condemn this, but what role do they have in addressing this very visible violence?
Well, I think what will be interesting now is in terms of the funerals, whether particularly with the killing last night of the police service in Northern Ireland officer, is whether Martin McGuinness, as Deputy First Minister from the nationalist tradition, a former IRA member now in the government of Northern Ireland, and Peter Robinson, the First Minister of Northern Ireland, whether they'll walk together, for example, behind the coffin in a show of solidarity, a Protestant Unionist Catholic nationalist show of solidarity to further isolate the dissidents. You know, they may well, they've cancelled their trip to America and meeting Barack Obama.
Right.
Again, that's postponed. And they may take the opportunity to stay for the funeral in Northern Ireland and walk together. And I think that would be yet another step in terms of the change politics of Northern Ireland. I mean, the peace process has been clearly marred, for want of a better and stronger term, in the last few days and weeks. The political process goes on, though. There's no way back, really, from the former sworn enemies of the Democratic Unionist Party and Sinn Féin sharing power in government, which is probably the most unlikely marriage, political marriage, you've ever seen.
But really?
That's where we've come from now. That's not to say that they've worked together fantastically in government. The Northern Ireland Assembly, politically, because you're trying to marry former, you know, political enemies, it's been suspended four times. It only restarted again last year, and it's been beset by problems. So, you know, let's not pretend everything politically is hunky-dory, that everything's fine. It's not. But the fact is that Sinn Féin has travelled such a long way politically that they can at least do business now, former enemies in government. And that further marginalises those who still want to carry the gun in Northern Ireland.
Do you imagine that those two gentlemen will walk next to each other at these funerals?
I think it's more likely than not, yeah. I mean, for Sinn Féin now, the police service of Northern Ireland is acceptable. Sinn Féin, politically, still doesn't like the British Army being in Northern Ireland, and that is why the condemnation from Sinn Féin of the killings of the British Army soldiers on Saturday was less strong than it's been today and last night in terms of the killing of a police service of Northern Ireland officer, because he was local. You know, Sinn Féin still wants a united Ireland, and it still doesn't want the British Army in Northern Ireland, but it is signed up to policing, to support for the police in Northern Ireland. So I think you wouldn't get, even now, even though they've come a long way politically, Sinn Féin walking behind the coffins of British Army soldiers killed. But you might get Sinn Féin walking behind the coffin in solidarity in terms of a police service in Northern Ireland officer being killed.
It would be interesting if President Barack Obama could join them walking behind those coffins as well in Northern Ireland. That would be quite a statement, but I think he has quite a bit on his plate right now.
Yeah, it's quite interesting because Barack Obama has made a few pronouncements on Northern Ireland, and he talked about the peace wars coming down between Protestant and Catholic in Northern Ireland, but strictly speaking, that's not actually true. There's actually been an increase in the number of peace wars physically separating the Protestant and Catholic communities since the 1998 Good Friday Agreement. The peace wars haven't come down. You know, there are arguments that they should be torn down. You can argue they're more porous than they used to be, and that people will cross them to go into other areas in a way they wouldn't do. But it's still a divided society in Northern Ireland. You know, intermarriage, if you want to call it mixed marriage between Protestants and Catholics, is still rare. Segregated education, Catholics overwhelmingly attend their own schools. Only about 5% of the population goes to integrated, non-denominational schools. So, you know, there's still an awful long way to go in terms of reintegrating Northern Ireland society. It's based upon a binary divide between Protestant Unionist British and Catholic Irish nationalists, which hasn't gone away with the Good Friday Agreement and the peace deal. You've still got a divided society, but it was a relatively peaceful divided society. And when I say relatively peaceful, there's been more than 100 people killed since the Good Friday Agreement in terms of what might be loosely called political violence. So, you know, this is an imperfect peace. It's been an uneasy peace at times, but the peace has broadly held until, you know, the dissident groups got going again, as they have over recent weeks and months.
Would you say, though, that ultimately, Professor Tong, that society has to be integrated for peace to be prevalent?
It does. It does. But Catholics would defend the right to educate their children in their own schools. So
right.
that's the first barrier. Secondly, the fact is, the Good Friday Agreement makes it quite explicit that it's, you're of equal legitimacy whether you're an Irish Catholic nationalist in Northern Ireland or a Protestant Unionist British person. It doesn't talk about you being just a Northern Irish person. So in some ways, the agreement, although it's laudable in many ways, the Good Friday Agreement in some ways reinforces the divide in Northern Ireland. The brave person will be the person who comes along and says, one day we're going to bulldoze these peace walls and in effect force the two communities who remain somewhat suspicious of each other to actually live together without walls dividing them. That would probably work. I think some peace walls could come down, although there will still be tensions during certain part times of the year, because you have the Protestant Orange parades during the summer, and some of them, even in recent years, have attracted some level of violence and opposition from Catholic nationalists, although certainly not as much as in previous years. So, you know, who's going to take the initiative in terms of reintegrating Northern Ireland? There isn't a great plan to reintegrate the communities at the moment.
Yeah. Thanks, Professor Tong, for being with us.
You're very welcome.
Professor Jonathan Tong, he is head of the School of Politics and Communication Studies at the University of Liverpool. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour, and thank you, John Treader, for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. We'll be back with another hour of conversation, and welcome your thoughts as we look at the people who pick tomatoes and their terrible plight in Florida. So all of that is coming up. I'm Kathleen Dunn here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.